This is Steve Hiles welcoming you to episode 13 of the Teacher Rockstar Podcast, a place where tips and strategies critical to the new teacher are discussed. In this episode, we're going to be talking about socialization of our children, as well as changing mental states. Now, new teachers, I really want to tell you this. This is one of the many things that I wish I had learned in school. I had learned this strategy many years ago in my teaching career through an Eric Jensen workshop. And once I implemented changing mental states, I noticed immediately positive results. And by the way, if you ever have the opportunity to attend an Eric Jensen workshop, please do it. You will not be disappointed, and it will be a transformational experience. Okay, let's dive right in. When I was in elementary school many years ago, the desks were lined up in traditional rows. I'm sure that there are those out there that have experienced this. Students stayed in their seats for most of the day, and you dared not talk to anybody. Punishments were swift and sometimes quite severe. Well, we have come a long way since then. Education and brain researchers concur. Learning is social. Now, if learning is social holds true in the real world as well as the classroom, then as teachers, why would we insist that children sit quietly all day in traditional rows? Not only is it hard on little bodies to physically endure, but certain aspects of brain development may remain untapped. The point is that children need to be able to brainstorm, discuss things with each other, and share information and ideas. They need to move their bodies and their minds. To grow, they need to engage with each other and the world around them. This is how ideas, brains, and bodies mature. Social interaction and cooperative learning skills are vital to emotional development. The child who learns how to share and cooperate with others will become an adult who can negotiate the complexities of work, home, and community life. Socialization is a process of acquiring values and understanding. In the famous videos first made just after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King in 1968, teacher Jane Elliott, now some of you may have read about this or studied about it, led a group of Iowa third graders through an anti-racism exercise, which became known as the Blue Eyes and the Brown Eyes. Now, in this exercise, again, which you may have studied about in your classes, she divided a class by eye color and told one group, the Blue Eyes in this case, that they were superior to the other, reversing the roles on the second day so that the second group was now considered superior. In addition to the lessons learned about race in this exercise, which has become the foundation for diversity training, astonishingly, the ones considered superior suddenly became able to do mathematical and reading problems that were beyond them before and got better grades on tests. Isn't this amazing? But then when the roles were reversed, they became submissive, subservient, and less able to do the classwork. Dominance and submission, superiority and inferiority, confidence and shyness, all of these social issues play into both the whole group interactions in a classroom and individual achievement levels. Studies of families living in poverty, for example, show that there are cultural influences equating wealth with intelligence, which may or may not become determiners of an individual child's abilities in school. Other studies that can be helpful for a new teacher to research before entering the classroom for the first time examine the context and consequences of the teacher-student relationship, which is very, very important here. Regardless if a teacher-student relationship is close or fraught with conflict, that relationship seems to both contribute to and be an indicator of a child's adjustment to school. Very, very important here. When a student likes school, many studies show they get better grades. Now, that would kind of appear to be common horse sense, right? Well, that may be a no-brainer, but it's cool when research can actually bear this out. Often the degree of liking comes down to the relationship with the teacher, which is crucial here. If students feel that their teacher likes them, they will tend to do better. Doesn't that just make sense? If they feel liked by the other children in the classroom, they will feel far more secure and comfortable spending their day with others. Part of your task as a teacher is to create and support a classroom attitude and atmosphere in which each child feels included and liked. Social interactions require face time, and that's probably the biggest detriment to distance learning, the social interaction. That's why I feel it is so important to factor in the social emotional learning into our lessons to the maximum extent possible. I think it goes without saying that students need to chat, to get to know each other and to learn what the predictable consequences of various kinds of interactions are. Through social interactions, students learn how to avoid conflict, how to negotiate to get their needs met, and how to develop and maintain friendships and positive relationships. Now, I will be the first to admit I cannot stand a noisy classroom. However, there is a difference between good noise, where students are actively engaged in learning, and bad noise, where it erupts into chaos. However, I know from experience that children can work effectively together and really benefit through cooperative group learning activities. Now, this image of the teacher pulling his or her hair out because of noise as the kids work in groups is simply not true. Granted, you should expect some good noise as the students discuss their tasks, but you do not need to expect or allow chaos to ensue in the classroom. Now, I want to go ahead and kind of shift gears here to something else, and that's change the setting, change the mood. And in the Eric Jensen workshop that I took, the instructor impressed upon us just how important that was. By changing mental states often, you can enhance the learning process. If nothing else, you can prevent boredom and simple fatigue. We need to strike a balance between safe, structured procedures and activities scheduled at predictable times with the occasional surprises. One of the most effective ways to change a mental state is to change the physical state of the person. Get the students up out of their seats frequently. Reconfigure the classroom to suit new activities. Take the class outside for a change of scene. You can also use subtle cues to change the whole mood of the classroom. Turn off some of the lights or turn everything on full. Open the windows or shut them. Turn on music or just simply ask for silence. The younger the child, the more frequently you need to have them do something physical. If you want proof of this, just go ahead and check out any kindergarten classroom and you'll see exactly what I mean. Watch the kids constantly moving around and you'll get it. For fourth and fifth grade students, the grade levels that I usually taught, you might want to change mental states about every 20 minutes or so, depending on the current activity and what you have going on. Rule of thumb here is that the younger the child, the more frequent mental states should be changed. Obviously, the teacher will have to use good judgment about when changes are beneficial, as they can tend to be disruptive. It can be difficult to get students to focus on tasks at hand when there are unfamiliar sights and sounds to observe. For some children, change can also evoke fears of the unknown, and they become emotionally reactive. However, the benefits of structuring your class day with frequent changes of mental and physical states can far outweigh any of the negatives. And I believe that this point bears repeating. Get your students up and out of their seats and physically moving about as often as you feel comfortably doing so. Okay? Well, this brings us to the end of this episode, and I hope that you found a golden nugget or two that you can use right away in your own classroom. There are some things that I wanted to share with you. The first being, I'm offering a free resource that I believe your students will absolutely enjoy, and that's creating their very own mini book. It's my let's write a book activity. Now, this resource comes complete with templates and step-by-step directions. All you have to do to grab your free copy today is by going to getstartedonthewrightfoot.com. That's getstartedonthewrightfoot.com. And when you get a moment, go to stevesclassroomresources.blogspot.com to sign up for my newsletter. You'll find lots of educational articles. I will be giving away freebies and unadvertised bonuses. Okay, also, should you ever have a question about this episode or a topic that you would like, you know, me to address, please feel free to reach out to me at any time at teacherrockstarpodcast@gmail.com. That's teacherrockstarpodcast@gmail.com. Well, folks, I want to thank you very much for joining me today. We'll see you next week, same time, same place. Until then, have yourself a great week. And always remember, teachers, you got this.